in association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. On today's show, we talk to Kelly Sue DeConnick, the writer of recent Marvel one-shots, Sif and Rescue. Kelly Sue started her career translating manga into English for Viz Media. She's also included in the comic book tattoo anthology of Tori Amos songs and has written with Steve Niles in the 30 Days of Night universe. Kel has a slate of stories still coming out from Marvel this year, including Girl Comics number 3 and The Heroic Age. We talk a little bit about all of these stories, and we picked an interesting time because Kel was very close to delivering her second baby, Tallulah, who is now part of the world and has joined the Matt Fraction family along with their son, Henry Leo. It's good timing for this conversation because Kel is on a text page in a lot of Marvel comics with May issue dates. And she talked a little bit about the things that she's working on. And also, invariably, when talking to a woman creator, the glass ceiling question comes up. Are women given the opportunity to do enough in comics? This is a conversation that we continue in our interview, and I ask her some direct questions about it. Much like her husband, Matt Fraction, Kelly Sue shares the same kind of pop culture stuff that Word Balloon fans and myself enjoy. So it's always fun to have a new member of the clubhouse come in and talk about all the things that we love. I think you're going to enjoy this episode of Word Balloon. Today it's brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where they offer a wide selection of hardcovers, trade paperbacks, essentials, omnibus editions, all at 35% or more off the standard retail price. And Kelly Sue is represented at InStockTrades.com. 30 Days of Night, the Eben and Sarah story, her trade paperback with Steve Niles. That's available at InStockTrades.com. The standard retail price is $17.99, but at InStockTrades, you can get it for $12.59. Also, something that just came out, Thor, the Latverian Prometheus trade paperback, which features stories from the Thor title, but also includes Kelly Sue and Ryan Stegman's recent Sif comic. The standard retail price for this is $14.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $9.44. Now, don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com for your monthly pre-order needs. For more information, go visit their websites, Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com, or InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. All right, we're rolling. Why is it every time we talk you're pregnant? Can I just point that out?
I don't know.
Last time I saw you was HL.
That's right.
And
that was in San Diego.
Tallulah is days away.
Possibly hours away. We don't know.
I said this to Kel before we started recording, that if I induce labor with the sound of my voice, I got to be honest. I've got my place in Valhalla if that's the case.
There you go. You know, and I thought after I wrote our tax checks that if anything was going to do it, that would.
Back to Sif. Tell me what you loved about Walt Simonson's Thor run.
I think there's a playfulness about it that I really enjoyed. It was the same feeling I sometimes have, well, less so now that I've been doing it for so long, but when I first started working in manga, the biggest thrill for me about it was I had no idea where they were going. You know, we're so used to 3-act structure and these plot templates that we use in our Western culture, more often than not, you know where the story's going. In manga, they would veer off on these crazy tangents that, and I had absolutely no idea what the next book was going to be about.
Okay.
And that was really fun for me. And there's something of that, I think, to Simonson's work. There just seemed to be no limit to his playfulness and his imagination and... You know, and then Thor's a frog, and now the horse guy comes in.
Yay.
Know, and it was just ridiculous and wonderful and playful.
Were you a mythology fan before reading comics?
Yeah, you know, although not so much Norse mythology.
Sure.
But when I was a little girl, my dad had to fill out some form for me of souvenirs that my mom held onto for me.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things he had to list was your child's interests. And he put dinosaurs and Greek mythology. And I don't know how old I was at the time, but I think it would have been about kindergarten.
Okay.
So, So clearly, yeah, this was something that went way back.
And, you know, I never ask creators, you know, when they started reading comics and stuff, just because, well, you know, they're guys. So, you know, I want to kind of get into that because I know you're part of the Girl Initiative at Marvel, and I know Sif's, the story of Sif is part of it. And obviously the rescue story with Pepper will be, too. But I will ask just because, you know, I always – well, we'll get into it. We'll get into my discomfort in a second. But first, tell me, what were your first comics?
Well, I honestly couldn't – in fact, this has been an interesting thing. I've recently been a part of two different conversations, groups of people where they could tell you what their first comic was.
Okay.
And I couldn't tell you issues. I couldn't tell you, like, oh, no. It was, you know, X-Men, whatever. That's
sure.
The first comic. I think this has a lot to do with it. My father was in the military, so we lived overseas.
Wow.
On a German Air Force base.
Cool. Which
and
city?
We only got... we lived actually in Hahn, H-A-H-N.
Okay.
Well, we lived all over. We lived in Japan and Germany and all over the States. But it was in Germany that I really got into comics.
Okay.
And I think it was largely because we only got one station of American television. And it wasn't very good, you know? It was like a lot of soap operas, not a lot of children's programming.
Okay.
So I enjoyed Star Trek because my dad's a giant nerd.
Very cool.
The base comic book store, the base bookstore, the Stars and Stripes, had a really huge, fantastic comic section. And I would go there with my friends that were like my after-school, like my folks both worked, so after school I would go over to the Edmondson's house.
Okay.
And they had a whole room full of comics, and we would go to the Stars and Stripes, and you could pick one out. They were 45 cents.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and my mom also was sort of, you know, it was the 70s, and the feminist movement was sort of rearing up again. And,
okay.
My mom would buy me issues of Wonder Woman, which I honestly think she thought was sort of a feminist tome. And I know, clearly she never read one. But,
Well, like, do you remember who, and I mean, not that you would know it then, but looking back, do you think, you know, like, was it white, you know, was it Denny O'Neill and Diana losing her powers Wonder Woman, or was it red, white, and blue Wonder Woman?
No, you know what, my memory of it doesn't match up, because I remember it being, some of the images that I remember are the George Perez relaunch.
Oh, okay.
But that's too late.
Right.
It doesn't match the years I was there.
Right, yeah, that was the 80s, obviously. Okay.
I haven't tried too hard to really go back and find what it was. I think if I found a page of covers from 70s Wonder Woman titles, I could probably... I'm sure there would be some bells ringing.
No, I understand. But, I can appreciate you mocking or just, you know, obviously your mom not realizing what was actually inside of Wonder Woman. But were there titles that did kind of, you know, were heroic enough for a female perspective back then? That you
Well,
liked?
I mean, they were always hypersexualized.
Sure.
But, and it's very interesting to me that my mom made no effort to censor that and no apology for it. Like, I was allowed to read Vampirella.
Sure. Atta girl.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I like your parents already.
Who
there you
I
go.
I love to this day. Who I absolutely love.
Why wouldn't you? Powerful hero. Absolutely. Go on.
I think it was actually a really cool thing that my mom did. That whatever I was interested in reading was fine with her.
That's great.
As long as I was reading, and if I wanted to talk to her about it, I could. And if I didn't, that was okay, too.
Yep. Sounds like my parents. That's very cool. And I, you know, from a different perspective,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's how they were with George Carlin records. I mean, I had those at 11 years old. They didn't blink. So
yeah, I had a, I also had a thing for Kiss.
Fair enough.
And I was a member of the KISS Army. I believe I had a belt buckle.
Outstanding.
Yes.
So did you read the?
No problem with it. Thought it was great.
Did you read the KISS comics back then, or no?
No, I wish. I didn't learn about the blood in the ink or anything until much later.
Yeah, very creepy. Very creepy.
When I wanted to dye my hair black, I was like, and this is a little older, but I want to dye my hair black. My mom was like, "Awesome, let's go get the dye and do it right now."
That's great.
Like, wait.
Oh, that's really cool.
A little bit of the juice out of my rebellion, but it was still awesome.
Very cool. No, that's terrific. Well, all right, back to Sif, because, there are definitely, to me, and maybe this is because I didn't read as much Thor as I thought I did, but I might have missed Sith's, I think mostly when I saw Sith, she was either conniving or damsel in distress or whatever. I don't remember really her attacking. I know she did during, for instance, the Simonson run. But this felt like a good Wonder Woman kind of story where she did take charge and she really was the hero.
Yeah, she, I wish my brain was clear enough to fight stories and issues for you. But she, she actually has fought side by side before with Beta Ray Bill.
Right.
Out in the space with the sword. she's a tough gal in her own right.
I like the, I always enjoyed mixing Norse mythology and science fiction. I do think it is kind of fun, and it's got that weird Chariots of the Gods kind of feel to it and everything every time I see it.
Yeah, isn't that great? I couldn't have invented it. I don't think I could have said, oh, and of course spaceships with,
So, but you're my, but for this story, you definitely felt absolutely it belongs there.
Yeah. No, I knew, well, we talked about what segment of time I had to work with. I knew absolutely that I wanted to. I think it really pretty heavily references the Simonson stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just so much fun for me. And then, I don't know what it says about me personally or where I am right now, but it almost feels like, thematically, the Sif story and the rescue story are very similar. They're both taking these women at a time when they have had their foundation shaken and helping them sort of get through that process. Which makes it sound like a rollicking adventure, doesn't it?
as much as any Oprah episode, absolutely, exactly.
Exactly.
Back after this. No, I...
Play with our cats and talk about our friends.
No, but honestly, was there an edict from editorial saying all these girl comics need to, a general theme or something like that? How was it conveyed to you? Okay.
No, I was given the gap of time I had to fill.
Okay.
But that was the only, there was no, like, this must have a positive girl message or anything like that.
Okay. For people who didn't read the story, I'm just going to give them a couple broad strokes, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but Beta Ray Bill comes to Earth looking for Thor to help him with a cosmic problem, and instead, Sif is there to say, no, he's busy, but I can help.
Yeah.
And it's a role that, doesn't happen that much in male comics. They're really, Sharon Carter could step in for Cap, I guess, in the right situation. You know what I mean? But no, honestly, and in the same case, obviously, and we saw it in Matt's story, where Pepper had to step up, too. So I absolutely see what you're saying in terms of a similarity go ahead. Correct
me. But she is, the difference is, Sharon's not a super soldier, and, Pepper is pretty uncomfortable in the suit, and she wants to take the suit on her own terms. But Sif is a warrior. Sif has fought as much as Thor has fought.
Uh-huh.
She's an Asgardian, so she has powers. I mean, and she has a history with Bill. So she's like, hi, right here. Hello, chop liver.
You know? Right.
Like, and dude, I can do this. Thank you very much. And she know, and, you know, the it has to do with Scuttlebutt, his ship. She knows the ship.
Right,
know? So
right.
It's just like, this is ridiculous. I'm right in front of you. And I'm wasting away in this stupid little town. Get me the hell out of here and let me do something.
I don't want to tip some of the other character little moments that are going to be there and complications for Bill and Sith together. But, it was very funny, Kel. It was good and good action. It was really neat to see her on her own. And I hope that, you know, there are more events that can lead to more regular appearances, because it's only going to be giving the center stage to some of these supporting characters that will allow a specific, you know, franchise to grow. That's why Superman is so rich, and you give a shit about Jimmy and you give a shit about Lois and Perry, because they've been around so long and they've had stories about themselves. And even, of course, in the case of Lois, you know, a title that lasted, you know, well over 170 issues or whatever it was. I mean, you know, I think this Girl Initiative is coming at an interesting time when, unfortunately, Janet had to die. And I wonder if that even prompted the editors to go, ooh, you know, we really lost one of the women.
It's interesting, you know, I've never asked what prompted it. I differ from some of the voices on the internet. I try not to read the comment threads after the interviews and whatnot.
I understand.
Because, no good comes of that. No good comes of that ever.
Right.
Really. You know, you can... I've watched people try to engage before, and it just becomes this huge time suck and... Yeah, it just gets bad. But,
well, I just had that conversation with Bendis where he said the internet is not built for. I loved it, and that'd be the only comment you see on the internet. It's absolutely true.
Yeah, and you know, there was I'm off on a tangent now, but Kurt Busiek. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Sounded right to me.
Busiek?
Yep.
Okay. He recently responded to someone who had written to say that, because of some of his political views, they could no longer buy his comics, and he gave them a very reasoned and thoughtful response. I actually admired it, but then I thought, you know, like, if you do that every time, dude, when you gonna write your comics? You know?
Yeah.
But it's posted up on his site, and it's really a fantastic.
I'm looking that up when we're done.
Whether you agree with him or not, it is very classy. It's classy, it's respectful, and he's in encouraging dialogue. I've read a couple things where I've said I don't feel like it is necessarily, it is not my mission to make sure that every woman character that I write is perfectly respectable, upstanding, solid, you know, something I want my daughter to aspire to be.
An ideal, yeah, yeah.
I think that that's just as limiting and ridiculous as not having women in at all. You know, it's just another kind of pigeonholing.
Sure.
What's interesting to me, what's important as far as my perspective goes, is moving these women, all kinds of women, wonderful, admirable women, horrible, manipulative, trashy women, evil, delightfully fun to write women, whatever they are, I would like to see them stop being plot points and start being protagonists.
Sure.
Because, you know, we are not so different from you. You know, we come in as many varieties as there are, you know, combinations of chromosomes. And but the thing in comics trying, and this is not a, you know, something I see across the board, but the thing that's difficult for me is when I see women being they're either tied to the railroad tracks, or they're the prize.
Sure.
Or they're, you know, the plot point or something that is there to be abused to upset our hero to such a degree that he'll go out and seek vengeance.
I understand.
You know?
Absolutely. No, this is an extension of the women in refrigerator, you know, discussion. And that's okay, because, and I don't want to stop you, kid. Go ahead, and I'll talk.
No, you're go.
Well, I was going to say, no, what I'm interested in, because I don't like having women creators on and having to talk about the woman thing, because most of the women that I do speak to, and I appreciate us having this conversation, because when I talk to Gail, when I've talked to Catherine, Colleen Doran, Diana Schutz, to me it's like, well, you're here, baby. You know, you've come a long way, baby. Bullshit. That literally was 30 years ago. I mean, that's what I mean. It just seems like to me, and especially given, you know, my age and growing up during the ERA, you know, amendment, the rise of the amendment and stuff, and watching the feminist movement from being a kid to an adult.
And what happened to our goddamn amendment? What the hell happened?
I understand, but I also think that I'm surrounded by professionals that do what I do and do it quite well. I mean, that's what I mean. And that's why I can appreciate what you're saying from a story standpoint, that maybe the lessons need to be learned. We were so worried about getting the creators equality, and I think it's getting better. You tell me. Am I nuts? Am I still, you foolish man?
You know, it's interesting. I did an internal interview for Marvel recently that's, I think, going to run in the back of one of the books, and I was asked what I would say to female fans and creators who still felt there was a glass ceiling.
Right.
And it was I felt very awkward about answering the question, because I do think that there is a glass ceiling. I don't think that there is a locked door. I think that from the professional perspective, it's become much easier for women to work in the industry. Absolutely.
Okay.
If you look at the writers that you would call, you know, A-list or top tier, I can come up with two women that might qualify. I would say I could think of two in the last 15 years.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And that's not a lot. Now, I don't want to suggest that I think that men are conspiring to keep us down or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think I think there are a lot of sociological aspects at play.
Sure.
I think there's a lot about the distribution models of comics that require you to have gotten into it as a child.
Definitely.
If that's becoming harder for men, I think doubly so for women.
I agree.
You know, we don't make as many comics for girls. I don't even really know what that means exactly, but we have fewer female heroes. We have, and then we have issues of social stigma, and for women to get into comics as an adult in the direct market, and this is probably going to get me in trouble, but I do think that's unlikely and difficult, except in a few stores across the country.
I know what you mean.
But, you know, you almost... I was also asked about why I thought there was such a female readership for manga versus, like, superhero comics.
Yeah.
And I
okay.
don't think that, first of all, that's comparing a medium to a genre. Because, you know, manga comes in as many varieties as
absolutely
well, any book.
Right.
But I don't think there's anything about, I don't think there's anything inherently masculine about superheroes or power fantasies or science fiction. I don't think there's anything biological there that makes it more interesting for men than for women. But I do think that we've tailored it to give men these characters to identify with, less so women. And then we distribute these books in such a way that a new reader, even if she's very interested, goes into the store and, like, has a character maybe that she's interested in.
Uh-huh.
So she would like to read, you know, I don't know, a hot girl comic or something.
Right.
And she goes in, and maybe there are four hot girl titles, and they are issues 221, 5, 3 of 7, and 6. You know what I mean? And it's like, what? Whereas she can go into Barnes & Noble, where she's very comfortable and knows her way around, go to the manga section, see spined books that she's familiar with, read the back of the book, which is something she's in the habit of doing from every other book she's ever read in her life, find one that has a topic that interests her, buy number one, and go home. You know what I mean?
I do. And I guess, you know, there's always been characters that, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe I got the male blinders on or whatever. Because I know for a fact, now you tweeted this a few months ago, and I was all giddy. You're like, hey, I found these Modesty Blaze, you know, books and stuff. And And I'm like, that's awesome. You've got to, don't hold out, you know, put the damn covers online and stuff. So,
oh,
I mean.
I love Modesty Blaze.
See, and that's, kid, you're the little sister I never had. I'm very proud of you, I think, but.
I got started a little late.
So. Well, that's cool. All right, fine. Regardless, Modesty Blaze, I guess, was set up to be a male fantasy, but luckily girls still found it as a cool, you know, powerful figure. I mean, for example.
I love her because she's such a stereotypical dude, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I love her. She's the James Bond I get to pretend to be.
Exactly. No question. No question.
She's a little better. She's a little better because she's not quite as clearly a good guy, you know?
Yes.
But I love Modesty Blaze's sexuality. I love that, you know, she's involved with these different men in these different books, but it never sticks. You know, like the real, like her love is Willie, but it's a pure and platonic love. And
no,
I don't
know.
There's something so, I don't know a better way to describe it. There's something so James Bond about her, but
no, absolutely.
But then, like with this little villainous background and
Cornell.
Yeah, I have a collection of a bunch of the old ones. I used to, every time we would go to a used bookstore, I would go see what I could find, and the covers are just fabulous.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Cornell, I'm sure you read it, his Paul Cornell's Black Widow series was definitely a nod to Modesty Blaze.
You know, I have not read it.
Oh, you'll love
it. I'm really embarrassed to say that.
You'll love it.
I have a huge stack of, I just did a Black Widow short as well, and I have a huge stack of Black Widow stuff. I didn't get to read all of it for my research, but yeah, if you're dropping the Modesty Blaze there, I'm bumping that to the top of the stack.
Yeah, definitely. No, you'll love it, and the art is really good too. And I forget who drew it for Paul, but it's a great miniseries, and I thought it was the better of the ones that Marvel recently put out. Is your short story going to be in Girl Comics?
No, I have a Satana short in Girl Comics.
Awesome! I read about that. Go ahead.
That's in Girl Comics 3.
Awesome. Very cool.
And I actually saw layouts for that today. And, ooh, I know who the artist is going to be, but I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say, but I'm really psyched about it.
All right. Well, you can tell me off the air then. That's all right.
Okay.
No worries. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I don't want you to tip anything you're not supposed to tip. Don't worry.
You're probably more familiar with how all of that works, actually, than I am, but... I told Matt I was really scared to talk to you.
No.
And he was, well, it's not, I mean, I've met you. I know you're delightful, and I've listened to a great many of your interviews, but, you know, I don't do any impressions.
No, but honestly, that's what I mean. You are one of those, and again, it goes back to my point about the glass ceiling again, because... No, Kel, you're one of us. Don't kid yourself. Of course you are. God, I read your description of Sif as Rosalind Russell, and immediately I'm like, there she is. Once again. You know?
Pepper, but yeah.
Oh, excuse me. It was Pepper. Thank you. Yes, of course it was Pepper. And yeah, I mean, and that's good. I mean, that's a good opportunity to talk about Rescue. But first of all, yeah, that was fantastic because really – who younger than us knows who the fuck Rosalind Russell is?
Right?
But you're right. And I can't think of a modern Rosalind Russell these days.
No, that's kind of sad, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
You know, Maggie Gyllenhaal can strike that note when she wants to, but it's not. She's not quite...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the closest was, Cate Blanchett doing... Catherine Hepburn in the Howard Hughes movie, The Aviator.
Yeah.
But even then, it was affected, obviously. But yeah, I can't even think of, you know, Holly Hunter, I guess, was kind of plucky. I don't know. I don't know how she felt for you as a girl. I don't know. She was tough enough.
Yeah, I like Holly Hunter.
All right.
but yeah, but there's not the...
His Girl Friday, Rosalind Russell.
With Rosalind Russell, you have this sense that her mind works. She not only talks faster than you do, she thinks faster than you do.
Yeah, His Girl Friday, absolutely.
And I think Pepper's like that, too. Like Pepper is completely unintimidated by Tony, can maintain perspective, but giving her, well, first of all, there's, you know, the loss of her husband.
Right.
And then, so that's you know, going to knock you off your game a little. And then she's been given this suit. And Pepper knows who she is. Pepper knows what she does well. She knows she's unflappable, you know?
I do. I'm sorry, quickly, because I'm very curious. Is Pepper haunted by Happy's, I mean, is she really a widow that really does still carry that around, as far as you're concerned?
I think so, yes. My story deals directly with it. I think, first of all, by my reading, I think Pepper was really in love with Happy. And when you lose your love, that stings. And it stings for more than 6 months. And when it happens in the kind of situation where I think Pepper feels a little responsible. And so my story is about Pepper coming to terms with how she can be in the suit and also trying to let go of any guilt that she has with regard to Happy, death, and also her relationship with Tony.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah. I'm doing a really great job of selling this stuff. I'm making every book sound like an issue or an episode of Oprah.
No, because honestly, I'm glad that that's being addressed because it. I think, first of all, enough time has passed that it could be conveniently put on aside, as it has been since it happened, and nobody would really blink. And if Pepper is getting center stage, it's fair to know what's going on in her mind. And I absolutely agree with you. My father was a widower. And, you know, he remarried, but I know that, yes, as you say, you carry that with you. That becomes part of you for really the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So, no, I understand. No, and that's heavy. But, you know, that's good. That's what's been missing in comics. And I always give it up to people like Matt and Gail Simone, and I mean, you know, at least, and I have a feeling she might be one of those A-list writers you were talking about, but I mean, that's the thing. I think characterization is what's been missing in comic books for so many years. We've had a little bit of it here and there in every decade, but honestly...
Yeah, Bendis, too. I think Bendis,
oh, sure.
Bendis is Spider-Woman.
Absolutely.
Is a fascinating character to me. She's a mess, and I love her.
I like that. No, and you're right about that. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, as when this airs, my talk with Brian will already be out, but we talked before C2E2, and that was one of my questions. I'm like, my God, man, you seem to be ready to run with that character. And I understand the reasons why they're stopping where they're stopping, but it just is so, like, because he said, oh, you know, the readers think there's a conspiracy. And I'm like, no, the readers just know that you are ready to burst with a lot of what's going on in Jessica Drew's mind. And now we're not going to get that for a while. And I don't know, who else is going to get a chance to touch it or whatever. But obviously, you're one writer who clearly is ready to go with Jessica Drew. So
yeah, she is just fascinating to me. And, you know, the kind of, there's a line I have used a couple times, and I stole it, I think, from Tori Amos. And I think it was many years ago. I believe it was Tori Amos talking about Madonna, but I'm not sure. She was like, yes, I just want to bring her home and make her spaghetti. And, like, I identify with that so well. Like, I feel that way about Rogue. I feel that way about... Spider-Woman. Oh, just come over, honey. I'm going to make you some spaghetti. You feel better.
So, all right, then this goes back to the Girl Initiative. In a lot of ways, should this be more reminding people of how cool these characters are and can be if they're given the stage? Or, in some cases, is it still, you know, she's still two-dimensional. Give me to her and I can, you know, show you a side that you never really thought of before and we can finally flesh this person out.
It depends on the writer and I don't think there's, some characters are just going to be there to, you know, lay pipe, and that's fine. And they can be male or female, and I don't care.
Sure.
But I will feel like progress. I feel like progress is being made when I see female protagonists, whether they be good guys or bad guys or, you know. A good friend of mine was very upset about some of the whole Scarlet Witch thing, that coming back to, of course, motherhood issues and, you know, how trite and, I don't know. I never really felt like it was particularly trite. I don't really care. And I think, like, I got some mommy issues, you know? I mean,
okay.
I think just as long as they, I mean, and I think I thought it was better writing than she thought it was. So it may have been just a difference of opinion in that way.
Sure.
But, and there are certainly cliches that I get sick of, but I don't know. It's comics.
Right.
I overthink it too much, but.
No, I agree.
Give me a couple of ladies that got some stories of their own to tell, and it would also be nice, as I'm bringing a daughter into the world, if there were some books that had... I always use Buffy as my example.
Of course.
Because I think she was so well done. She's so imperfect and so unsure and so willing to go out and kick ass anyway.
Yep.
And that's a character that... that I love seeing now, and if I was a you know, 10 or 12-year-old kid would be just, you know, posters on my wall.
What about Sidney Bristow, Alias? What do you think of Jennifer Garner's character?
Oh, man, you know, I love that show.
Me too. Well, and until it got shitty, but no, yeah, me too. And yeah, I don't know, did you stick with it till the end?
No, I think I dropped it before the last two seasons.
Yeah, okay, that's what I did. I thought, really, to be honest, and I sat through that third season and was kind of disappointed that I did. But yeah, I thought like the first two seasons were amazing. I came back for the end to see how it all wrapped up, and I did like poke my head in every now and then during the fourth and fifth seasons, but it just lost its way. But I was just wondering if Sydney was, you know, tough enough, or was she too cry, you know, weenie-ish, or you know,
oh,
I don't know.
No.
Okay.
I think she was fantastic. And I love, there's a lot of things to love about that series, actually. I love, that series is a teen book, you know?
Sure.
Mean, Sydney's our star, but we have a solid team, and everybody's got their expertise, and when the, oh, God, what was his name?
Marshall.
The wonderful nerd.
Yeah, Marshall.
Yes, when Marshall would go out into the field, you know, you were so, like, giddy and cheering for him. And
well, and also her father, was, the guy who played her father.
Oh, Spy Daddy.
Yes, and also, honestly, I would watch that guy, and I forget his name right now. I know he played Sinestro.
Victor Gerber.
Thank you, Victor Gerber. I had a girl. I'm like, I was convinced. I'm like, that is your Dark Knight Returns Batman. Victor Garber could have been awesome. Because he had the polish of Bruce Wayne and the, all right, got to do this. Let me.
Yeah, he was just like there was almost something that was such weird casting that worked so well.
Yes.
That it reminded me in the you know, the 70s action movies that starred, like, you know, Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau. And you're like, what?
Our favorite movies, yes. Alex and the Gypsy and Charlie Varick and Laughing Policeman. Go on.
Yes, absolutely. And like, somehow they make it work. It was kind of like the contemporary equivalent of that. You're like, wait, that dude's supposed to... All right. And he totally did.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and then Sydney was like the most conspicuous spy in the history of spydom. Like, I'm going to blend in, so I think I'll wear this hot pink wig and a rubber corset. And apparently, like, if you have anything to hide from government, you should probably put it in the back of a German dance club, because it seemed like every episode when they had to go in and liberate something, it was, like, in the back of a club somehow.
True.
So, yeah, no, I unapologetically love that series.
And also, God, have you tried to watch the 60s Mission Impossible since watching Alias? Have you watched it since?
Oh, no, I haven't.
It's painfully slow. Painfully slow.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's so, you know, they really need to, like, try, and I don't think they can do it because of the Lalo Schifrin music all over the place, but, like, edit it down, because, honestly, Barney is cracking a safe for, like, 25 minutes, where, you know, Sidney Bristow, and it took her, like, you know, 10 seconds, and there was a hot dance beat going on while she was doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Back to Marvel Heroes, and specifically Marvel's female heroes. You know, I'm not asking for preconceived, you know, like any two doors that we're either going to have to discover this character with all of these girl initiative stories for the first time, or that, you know, that's this reinforcement, because I read the first issue of Girl Comics. They're a lot of fun. And I mean, there are just some fun throwaway stories and everything. And as you say, you know, characters are just laying pipe, and that's fine. So,
I think it's an anthology.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I think there's some really great things about, I mean, all of these women are professional, so this wasn't, it's not about, for me at least, anyway, it's not about, like, make work, you know, not like, oh, well, we're gonna throw all these ladies a bone.
Right.
You know, but it was about raising the profile of, no, look, see, so that if there are young women out there who are interested, If you want to write pulp stories, you can do it. There are a lot of women, or draw, or you know, or edit, or
color,
or ink,
yes.
or you know,
absolutely.
Any of the roles that were filled by women in this book. There are a lot of women who do these things, and we don't know so much because so much of the top tier is so decidedly male. So I think that was a really fantastic thing to raise the profile of women in comics in general.
Sure.
And I'm talking about women professionals, and also. You know, specifically some of these women, to be reminded of their work and to be able to flip through and go, you know, like every part of this book, there was a woman behind that role. Like, you know, it was inked by a woman, it was colored by a woman, it was edited by, you know, that's
sure.
But I think it's sort of interesting. Is it a gimmick? Yes, it is. But I do think it serves a purpose.
Sure.
And I think the freedom that we had in pitching these stories, that we didn't have to all do stories about women, and we didn't have to, you know, I don't know what anybody else's experience was, but I was given no edict whatsoever. I was given, who have you always wanted to play with? Give me a pitch.
Cool.
And I thought that was fantastic. Now, all of that said, it's an anthology just like any other anthology.
Of course.
And so there are going to be some that hit the mark and some that don't so much. And there are going to be characters that you like more than others and somebody's art style that you like more than others. And I think it is absolutely perfect that it should be unremarkable from any other anthology, save that... Huh. This was all ladies.
I understand what you said, and I agree. Yeah. I think that's great. And you know, honestly, you're right. I am sad that Gail Simone left Action Comics as quickly as she did when she was writing Superman. I think Catherine Immonen just wrote an excellent short Superman story in that 80-page giant a couple weeks ago. I loved that first issue of Girl Comics. It's great. Go ahead.
Catherine is so talented. And I think Catherine has no idea how good she is. I think Catherine is one of those people who thinks that she's going to be found out any minute as a fraud. You know what I mean?
I do.
And I think she genuinely has no idea the depth of her ability. I like her very much.
I know you do. It. I was really pleased when you were like, you got to talk to Catherine Immonen, and I was glad the opportunity came up last summer. She came into town, and we did it for the Hellcat miniseries, and it was great.
Yeah, I listened to it.
God bless you. And I did just recently email her, and in fact reminded Staros of this this weekend because. Hers and Stewart's collection of moving pictures is coming out very soon, and I want to have her back. Also, because I have to admit, and just like any creator, you don't read everything they're doing, but it just so happened that I wanted to time it for moving pictures, but also that, you know, suddenly I didn't know this Superman short story was coming out, and it was fantastic. And it was just a great... Yeah. Did you read it?
No.
Oh, my God. It's such a great Clark Kent, Lois Lane story. And it's wonderful, and it really it's a Lois story, just Lois sick.
Okay, that makes me ache. I totally have a Lois thing. I used to put out a zine when I was in my young 20s called Lois. yeah, are you ready? You prepare yourself to cringe. It was called Lois Slain, S-L-A-I-N, and it had a sort of dead girl reporter, crypt keeper type character that was the host.
This. Was it like a Tales of the Crypt kind of thing? Is that what it was? Or?
Yeah.
Sweet. Fantastic.
Yeah, it wasn't really that great, but it's near and dear to my heart nonetheless. I have a very strong opinions about Lois Lane. So now I have to read this, and I'm certain that I'll love it.
And I want to hear, actually, because I wanted to ask about this. I told Greg Rucka years ago on Word Balloon, and I still mean it, DC is nuts for not having a new Lois Lane series, especially, I think, the way that they have positioned her in the last 20 years. I think Lois has never been stronger, and it kind of bothers me that she doesn't get... Yes, and in terms of the characterization...
I thought Bill Roseman did one at some point. Not that... Oh, God, probably it is that long ago. How long have I been... Oh, Lord. I think Bill... I could be wrong about this. I think Bill Roseman did one. But somehow it never found its footing. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, that character's got so much potential and so, so iconic. I mean, talk about your Rosalind Russell. There's another one.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the DC Rosalind Russell, no question. And truly Superman's equal, and that this human woman has him completely buffaloed and has no, you know... I love that. I think that's excellent. And it really, it shows a strength that she could have always had, and it really did take a modern sensibility to get there. And it was interesting that Greg is one of the, you know, people that actually is able to articulate that the times that he's able to write her.
Yeah.
So, you know,
he's talent too, isn't he? Wow.
Yeah, well, and he's, I mean, are there, what other guys, and I hate to pigeonhole because it drives me nuts, but really, I mean, there are obviously men like Joss Whedon, like Greg, that get women and can write different kinds of women and write three-dimensional women. So
yeah,
and again,
you know, I mean, it doesn't. Some of the boy, I'm going to take a shot for this. I'm certain, but you know, Ernest Hemingway was probably a misogynist if there ever was one, and yet. Lady Brett Ashley is one of the most fascinating real women of literature I've ever read. She's horribly flawed and to me absolutely real. So I mean, I don't think, you know, most of the men that we've mentioned, I don't know Joss Whedon personally, but I know Greg and Brian and my husband are, you know, very progressive gentlemen and who write strong and interesting and also weak and interesting and also petty and interesting, but like they write complex women and they let the women move the action. They don't keep them as plot points.
Okay, now in... This is going to sound embarrassing, so I will qualify it by saying, obviously I'm speaking from a writing standpoint, but given that you are writing Rescue, and Matt has been writing not only Pepper and Tony, did you, like, soundboard with Matt and do any role-playing? And again, notice how I qualified that and didn't get it creepy. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, let's pretend we did.
Well, if I really wanted to do that, I'd be more interested in Thor and Sif having conversations, obviously.
There you go. Yeah, lots of Zys and Zs around the dinner table.
Poor Henry. Mommy and Daddy are playing. Okay. Nice.
And then,
nice.
Then Henry would, you know, Henry is elephant obsessed.
No.
So, yes, he is elephant obsessed. And so he will know you for about 30 seconds, and then he will force a toy elephant into your hand and make you play Animal Talk with him. Which means you will voice that elephant, and he will voice this elephant, and they will have a conversation. So, I like the idea that they would be Asgardian elephants. That would be awesome.
Very nice. Very nice. So, do you guys, honestly, do you go over dialogue? Do you sound stuff out with them?
You know, we do, yes and no. I mean, if I have, like, he came in today, popped his head in my office and was like, is this too twee? The fact that I'm asking you about it probably means that it is. but I kind of want to do it anyway, so what do you think? And threw out a line of dialogue that he was considering. And actually, in this case, I was like, no, you know, I really think that works. And then he popped back in his office, and I popped back in his office at one point and said, hey, I just got a note that said this and this, and I kind of disagree with it, but I might be just being defensive. Am I wrong? You know?
Cool.
And honestly, this is the, you know, this is the fantasy. This is when we first were a courtin', and we were talking about, you know, wanting to be, you know, we both wanted to be professional writers, and, you know, we both were writing professionally at the time, but in different capacities and not completely full-time. And we talked about, well, in our fantasy life, we didn't know each other that well, so we didn't. So we had positioned it so that we were sharing an office. That will never happen. But we would talk about like being able to turn around to the other one and go, "Oh, what's the word for you know?" Or
very cute.
I want to do this here, and what do you think? And I mean, it's sort of dorky, but it's pretty great.
That's cool.
Now, he has also, you know, with going back to the glass ceiling thing, I also feel it necessary to say that I'm not, at this point in my career, this is not something that I am bumping my head up against, that it is far, far too early for me. And I am not in any way trying to suggest that the man is trying to keep me down.
I understand.
Matt is, you know, much more experienced writing superhero comics than I am, writing comics than I am. I mean, I've done, if he were adapting manga into English,
mm-hmm.
I would feel very comfortable advising him in that capacity.
I understand.
But he's done a lot more of this than I have. So I would honestly be a fool not to take advantage of that in some ways. But we don't share everything. We don't honestly have time. You know, we have deadlines and...
And children.
And life and
yeah.
One kid and another on the way.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we don't read everything of each other's. And,
well, I get that. It doesn't, and that's not obviously, and you know it yourself, being, and I know you've been on panels with other comic book couples that are both, mm-hmm. you know, writing and drawing. And so, no, and it's a familiar refrain. I'm not surprised to hear that. I know that too with even in town. Jill Thompson and Brian Azzarello, you know, very separate careers, but a wonderful couple. And it's very funny, you know, and it's,
I had no idea they were a couple.
And that's the other thing too. There you go. So
that's kind of awesome. I kind of love that. I had no idea they were a couple.
And exactly. And that's the thing. Their art and their personalities are incredibly separate. So
that kind of blows my mind. I'm going to say kinda again. Kinda.
Well, anyway.
That's amazing.
But yeah, and that's, no, so that makes sense. And actually, I was laughing because you, in one of our tweets to each other, you were telling me that you emailed Matt some question, and you're like, yes, we are in the same house. Yes, I am emailing him. Shut up. And it really is, yeah. This 21st century Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt kind of relationship.
Dude, I have been known to, back in the days when we used IM, which we don't use anymore. Now
sure.
Everything is Twitter. But I have been known to IM him from the other end of the couch. I am not making that up.
I believe you. So I loved in your blog when you and you know, not being a parent, I don't know that I forget what it's called when the spouse buys the pregnant wife
a push present.
A push present. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw on your blog your very cool little typewriter. Why don't you talk about that for a second?
Isn't that the most wonderful thing?
It's
yeah.
It's so 50s. It is so like awesomely like early, you know, or early 60s. I don't even know when the make is, but that.
Oh, it's, I think it's it's from the 50s. I don't remember off the top of my head, but there's a few reasons that's super special, but one is that I had a typewriter that was, I'm a big Hemingway fan.
Cool.
I had an old, I can't even remember what it was.
Smith Corona?
Yeah, might have been. Yeah, no, I had an old manual typewriter that one of the, it looked to me like something that belonged on Hemingway's desk. And it was given to me by an old beau.
Okay.
And, you know, the relationship went the way of the dinosaurs, but I loved that typewriter. And when I had my horrible cubicle job working for Citigroup, and I was writing on the side, and I was at the time writing for a lot of what we lovingly refer to as brown paper wrapper magazines.
Sure. Which ones? Can you say, or would you rather not say who you wrote for?
Oh, no, I wrote for a bunch of them. I wrote for...
Red Book?
Huh?
Red Book? Family Circle?
Yeah, right. No.
Or Dirty Magazines.
Tight, Petite.
Nice!
Leg Action, Swank Confidential,
Yeah. Outstanding. I had no idea. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great. I know, you know.
And, you know, I was praising my mother earlier, so let me give my dad a high five here in that when I told my dad what I was doing, he said, well, I'm sure that there are a lot of women writers who didn't get their start at the New York Times.
Good man. Father of the year, ladies.
I didn't learn to write to order. I learned to write, you know, I learned to have an editor. I learned to meet deadlines. There were a lot of things about it I learned. There was a lot about it that got real old real fast.
I can appreciate it. Yeah, get very mundane after, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I actually, I knew it was time to quit when I got a note back that said it was one of my pieces was too creative. Like, all right, I'm done. Too creative? What the hell does that mean?
We are trying to appeal to our clientele on a gut level, Mr. Connick.
Yeah. So,
wow. Too funny, woman. You're killing me. That's awesome. I had no idea. That's very, very funny.
So I had this awful job at Citibank, and I was writing for these trashy, terrible magazines on the side, trying to build something of a writing career, and it was kind of a miserable existence, honestly. And I had that typewriter in my cubicle as a kind of, like, eye on the prize thing.
Absolutely.
Like, and some asshole stole it.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was, I just came in one day, and it was gone. And, you know, and I reported it to security, and they so didn't care.
Sure. Sure.
And it was never found. I have no idea why anyone would take my typewriter. But I was heartbroken about it. And I always wanted to get myself another one, but you can't really... My fingers are not strong enough to type on those things. I don't, you know, I mean...
Yeah, the manuals, really anybody that's younger than 30 might not remember that manual typewriters, they were like... You got strong fingers after all, or you broke them, or you made no impact on them whatsoever. And you're a tiny little thing, absolutely.
I was born in 1970, and I learned on a typewriter, but I did learn on an electric typewriter.
Not a girl.
You know?
Sure, of course.
Anyway, it was just never a purchase I could justify. It was always on Matt and I talk about, we have our rich guy lists.
Sure.
You know, like just ridiculous things that someday when you... You know, in our fantasy life, when we don't really have to worry that much about money, but one of Matt's is to have a jukebox.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so he'd like to have a jukebox in his office, which I think is really awesome. Anyway, so the typewriter was on my rich guy list, and he got it for me, and it's pink. Just about the greatest thing in the world. And I actually looked while we were talking. It's from 1965.
Cool. And it's a little portable. I mean, it's not one of those big ones you used to see, like in His Girl Friday or something like that. It is this sleek little thing that I could see Doris Day carrying around in, like, you know, pillow talk or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
In the case.
Fantastic.
There's a picture on my blog. It's just sitting out
yes.
on my bookcase. But it came in the case, which is sort of it looks like a lady's train case.
Or absolutely.
A bowling bag, you know.
My cousin had a lime green one that was probably not that much older or younger than the model that you have in your thing. And he still used it to type his deeds when he would rent apartments and stuff. So.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have a computer now, but I in the 90s, oh, yeah, I've got deeds that he would type on this little, like, lime green, you know, typewriter. And I'm like, yeah, aren't you special, Gertrude? Go right ahead.
Wow.
And he's this big, giant Mark Messier kind of hockey player looking kind of guy. So, yeah, it looked pretty ridiculous.
That's kind of fantastic, though. Did he hunt and pack? Because that would make it even
absolutely.
Better.
Of course he did. He's a construction worker.
Yeah.
Of course he did.
I love the big guy hunched over the little typewriter typing with two fingers.
Pretty much. So, no, that's really cool. And that's and I got to admit, you writing trashy fiction, kind of awesome. That's awesome. Very nice.
Thank you. I wish it was as fun to do as it is a good story to tell, you know?
Back to us.
Okay.
No, let's see. What else?
Who are we? What were we talking about?
Exactly. No, honestly, this is good. You are tangenting away, and I knew you would, because, like I said, you were in the same club. You just happened to be a girl, and you like all the same stuff that we all like, so that's cool. But no, honestly, that's what I love when I talk to you or Jen Van Meter. And again, back to the glass ceiling, I'm glad that, you know, you guys recognize and say, no, we're not there yet. And we do need things to kind of remind people that these jobs are very capably handled by as many women, and also to give them the forum for people who don't really think about it to say, yeah, you enjoyed that story. Guess what? You know, it was all done by women. And really, yeah, take a moment to realize that they are just as capable. And, you know, let's see more of this. So that's.
And just as nerdy.
Yes, but that's what's cool. Honestly, no,
I know I've said this before, but I'm not suggesting that there's some conspiracy to keep women down. I just think that there are a lot of things, and you know, and this is a whole other can of worms that we really just don't even need to get into, but there's also, like, you know, women are much more likely to take time off for raising our families, and I mean, this is something that has been a thing for me. Right before Henry was born, my work cranked up.
Yes.
And I don't know if that was a provider angst on my part or what was going on, but right before he was born, I was doing like 5 books a month or something. I mean, I was really had a crazy schedule right before he was born.
Okay.
Then after he was born, and he was my first, and there was a lot of, I also spent some of my pregnancy with him, at my grandmother's bedside while she died, which, you know,
yeah,
was not I'm glad I was there.
But I understand.
Didn't do a whole lot for my productivity. Anyway, after he was born, I went down to a single property, and I did that for about a year and a half before I started getting some more work. Well. So here we are. We've made this big move. I'm pregnant again. And all this work is coming in. And, you know, and I've talked to Matt about it. And I'm like, you know, I'm scared to death. I turn 40 this summer. I'm going to need to take some time off to adjust to being a mother of two and how my schedule is going to work. And
certainly.
But you don't get that many chances. I don't get to hit restart indefinitely. So you know, whatever, and maybe I'm flattering myself here, but whatever momentum I have going right now, I am terrified to let that go. And that's a real thing. That's a, like, I don't think you get to keep walking on and off the stage over and over again. And I think that as mothers, we're a lot, you know, whether it's by nature or nurture or, you know, what it is, it's a lot more likely that we are going to be the ones that are stepping back to do that, to focus on the family and then trying to reenter the workplace. And it's a hard thing to do. I have no answer to that. I don't think that it's not a simple issue. I don't think there's anyone in particular to blame. I don't know. I'm just playing it by ear, honestly.
Sure. Well, the only, and hey, here, ladies and gentlemen, here is single Uncle Buck with the answer. Fantastic. Take it away, Buck. No, honestly, what I want to say is, and I'm sure it has occurred to you as well, there are good examples of, Gail's got kids. She's, you know, she's writing and stuff. Catherine has, you know, a kid. I think that your creativity will force its way out because I've heard writers in general speak like this. And you just strike me as that kind of person, Kel, honestly, that, believe me, I can't imagine the Herculean effort it is to raise one child, let alone two. And I do give it up to you guys. It is a thankless job, but yet you guys literally create the next generation and mold the next generation. And I mean this as mothers.
Thank you. That's very sweet. But it absolutely isn't a thankless job. It's a total joy. It's something we chose.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, but there's also, I would like to have my cake and eat it, too.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, who wouldn't? Absolutely. And that is something, again, we go back to the equal rights movement and stuff. This is something that they promised. And I do think it's fair for women to have that expectation. And again, which is why I go back to, must we still have the glass ceiling argument? And we're not. We're having the discussion. But that's what I mean. It's like, yes. And I do believe that there are a good number of men out there that are saying, absolutely, let's find a way to make it happen. And I do. I see it in the successful marriages. I also see the failed marriages where that doesn't happen and stuff. But that's what I mean. I do think that you don't know what's going to happen. But I do also think that, you know, there's every reason for it to continue to happen, that you will be able to do both. And I, you know, here's hoping it happens.
Well, from your mouth to God's ear, honey.
No, you know, honestly, this has been a lot of fun, and I knew it would be. And I'm glad we've hit some of these things, because as I was preparing, I like I said, I struggled with, do we really have to talk about the girl thing? Do we really need to do that?
Yeah.
But I'm glad we did it. This
is
good.
I get that, and it's funny because I'm actually right there with you, because on the one hand, you know, these are issues that are near and dear to my heart. I am a proud feminist. I wear that title unapologetically.
Sure.
You know, my bedside table literally has two books on the suffragette movement and one on nurture shock, a sort of book about parenting that's non-gender specific, and then another one that's the good girl curse, or the curse of the good girl, that is about raising girls to be authentically themselves.
Interesting.
I mean, this is very definitely something that's in the forefront of my mind. At the same time, I'm not sure I want to be the girl, you know? I'm not sure I want to be like, oh God, let's not talk to her. All she talks about is how interesting that, you know, women haven't, there are so many working women in the industry, but only up to a certain level. And why is that? And what do,
right,
how
the
much
advocate.
Of that do we do to ourselves?
Right.
And, you know.
No, I understand that. And again, that is why I can appreciate some women not wanting to be the advocate and have to be the voice of, well, speaking, you know, for all of us, I believe, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Let me tell you, on behalf of women, yeah. I read the comments after one of my interviews. Clearly, I don't speak on behalf of women.
Do other women say, yeah, fuck you, bullshit, in their own sweet way, of course?
Yeah, I've read at least one that said, it was one of those things where I was like, do not engage, do not engage, do not engage, go upstairs, get a glass of water.
From a girl?
She pulled out a quote. I'm totally calling her out now, but she doesn't listen to the show. But she pulled out a quote where I'd said that I didn't think every woman had to be the righteous, upstanding citizen. That, like, I like writing villains.
Right.
When I got to pick any character I wanted to pitch for girl comics, I picked Satana, you know? She's a succubus, guys. That was my first pick.
Go on.
And she pulled out this quote, and she was like, and then she said something about that she was that like, but can you name one? And I thought, like seriously, you don't think that in all of comicdom there's one well-written woman? Like, yes, I can name one, and I'm so totally not going to sit down and debate you about this because that's stupid, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And anyway, so it was just like there. I think there are things. There are issues to discuss, and there are things to be, angry about. And I mean that really in a bigger sense than comics. I really mean that in just sort of a, women still make 70 cents on the dollar and don't have the same breadth of opportunities available to them as men in the world. And I'm sorry if that makes people uncomfortable. I think it's true, and it sucks. But at the same time, let's only fight the real fights, let's not make shit up. Like,
right.
But, and there are also, a friend of mine, and I won't name her because I haven't cleared that with her, but a friend of mine got a request for an interview from a young woman who wanted to work in the gaming industry who wanted advice, and basically what she said was, as someone who works in comics, I thought that you would understand this, and this is not word for word, but basically what she said was, I want to know how you stomach working in an industry that actively does damage to your gender, because I want to do it too. And it was like, okay, I'm not conceding the premise here. Like, I don't, first of all, if you would like me to give you some of my time for free, don't make your opening salvo, like, calling me a gender traitor.
I understand.
And, I don't think comics are anti-woman. I think there are some comics that are perhaps, there are just stupid comics in the world, but there are a lot of comics in the world. There are also some really fantastic comics in the world.
Absolutely.
So let's get upset about the things that are real things to get upset about, or let's try to think through or work through or improve the things that are genuine issues, and let's not make shit up. So...
cool.
Okay, now I'm going to step off my soapbox.
No, and I actually, we can actually leave it there, because is there anything I haven't covered that you want to talk about? You've got Satana coming up. You've got the Pepper rescue story.
Yes.
Okay, and the Satana.
And that's,
go ahead.
Andrea Moody is the he's an Italian artist, and man, he has just nailed some. There's some quiet panels in there that I was really worried about.
Like, okay.
If I was casting this, they would. There was a couple things where, like, there was a couple quiet panels that I really needed somebody who could pull off the acting, and then there's also a couple of things that could have been really saccharine if they were played wrong.
Okay.
And he nailed both of them. And, yeah, so that was just really... I've had really good artist experiences so far. Like, it's been very satisfying.
Tell me who drew the Sif book.
Ryan Stegman.
Oh, yes, of course.
Man, I wish I could say I asked for him. It is so weird because we know so many of the same people. Like, on Twitter, he's friends with, like, I swear to God, you could, it's like he lives in Kansas City. He talks to all the KC people.
Sure.
I had never heard of this man.
I don't know him personally either, but yeah, I think we share the same mutual friends. So.
Yeah, it was just like, what? And I think CB recommended him.
Cool.
To Alejandro, and Alejandro sent me his samples, and I was like, yeah. Because, you know, I mean, shoot me. I wanted my first Marvel comic to look like a Marvel comic.
Atta girl.
You know?
Absolutely.
And it does. Like, it's very much that, like, action aesthetic and...
No question, and we should point that out because all we've been doing is pointing out some of the Oprah moments of the Sif story. But frankly, no, there is some really great sci-fi action that goes on. Beta Ray Bill is part of it and looks great. And the fight scenes are cool. The alien scenes are cool. The scenes in Oklahoma are very cool too. But no, it really does work on a lot of levels. So it's important to point that out. Yeah.
There's some kicking.
At a girl.
Exploding.
Absolutely. Very true. Absolutely. And who does the Satana story?
Now, see, that's the one that...
Oh, that's right. Excuse me. You're not allowed to say excuse me. I'm sorry. That wasn't a trick.
Well, I can't imagine that it wouldn't be okay for me to say, but
no.
One has expressly told me. I'm nervous.
No, I can appreciate that, and it's probably in the next previews. So
I bet you're right.
So yeah, it's cool. No worries. And if it is okay, then I'll tack it on at the end, and we'll mention it in the close. But
okay,
that's fine.
Anything? Yeah, it's in Girl Comics, so it's a woman penciler, and she's awesome.
Cool. Anything else coming up that you've written? And you don't have to if you can't talk about it. That's okay. But like, will there be more things that come out from you after? After Rescue?
Yes.
Excellent.
At least two more. And then I'm still doing at least two more things for Marvel, and then I'm still doing the English adaptation of Slam Dunk for Viz.
Very cool. And, you know, I'm a manga knucklehead. I truly am. I really...
That's okay.
You know, honest. And it was so cool seeing... I went to the retailer summit at C2E2, and Viz, God damn it, what was the name of that book? I can't remember right now, but I've got it written down. And it was the first manga, besides GoGo 13, which I love, the James Bond kind of Japanese pastiche. But other than that, I'm just not a manga guy. I really haven't... I think that is where I'm almost too old, where, like, I can do the, you know, reading opposite thing, but I really do have to think about it when I do it. And it does kind of drive me crazy.
I've done it for... years now, and it's messed me up to the degree that I have to when I get art back from American artists, I have to make sure I'm reading it in the right direction. It's interesting. That's one of the things that I mean. There's just a lot of little tricks that are so. Specific to this medium that, you know, like I have a little post-it note up on my monitor with like, you know, the guidelines for the rough idea of how many, you know, if you have five panels on a page, like the panels can hold about 42 words a page as a rough guideline. And,
right.
You know, and it breaks it down. It actually only goes up to six panels, but I have that, and then like the little reminders to like, you know, I am not a designer. I'm not an artist. so I try as much as possible to stay out of their way.
Sure.
I try not to. I don't attempt to design the page myself. If I have an idea for, I'll say, you know, this is how I'm seeing this in my head. But you're better at this than I am.
Sure.
So if you think you have a better way of telling this story, by all means, do it that way. But yeah, one of those things that Matt was talking, just like giving me tips early on, it was like, you know, if you have people on the right side of the panel and people on the left side of the panel, if the person on the right side of the panel speaks first, it's going to be a little awkward.
Okay.
So
okay.
If you can tweak it a little bit so the person on the left speaks first, that's a thing. And it's one of those things that you're just like, that is so not a part of your, I mean, even having read comics for as long as I have read comics, I never tried to reverse engineer them. I was much more likely when I was a kid to try to draw a panel, you know?
Sure.
Than I was to, like, do something like what my husband would do, which is to take a comic and then try to create the script that produced that comic.
Wow.
That, yeah, that's the kind of nerd I'm married to.
I was going
to
say, but, yeah, really. Sorry.
No, I mean, it's fantastic and vaguely neurotic, but yeah, that's the thing he does. But I just never thought about so many of those little things.
Well, as fans, we all say, gee, you know, and no fan can deny the thought of, oh, you know, I wonder if I could do it and stuff. But you're right. No, there's a lot of craft going on, and you really do have to be aware of that stuff to be effective. So,
well, yeah, and you know, and I think I always talk about the manga work and say, you know, when I'm doing my job well, my hand is invisible. So if, you know, you don't, I've worked on so many books over the years. I've written more than 10,000 pages of dialogue for manga.
Wow.
And I've so many different styles and so many different authors, from, like, you know, teenage romance to horror. And I would like to think that none of them sound like me. You know, that I haven't, when I've done my job well, I have gotten out of the way of the original artist.
Absolutely, yes.
And I think that there's an element of that as well, too. Writing original stuff, that when you've done your job well, when you're really good at your craft, no one notices. It just seems effortless, and they're involved in the story. You know?
Definitely.
So, I mean, I appreciate those moments sometimes in a book where, you know, there's like a, oh, that was clever. But I appreciate it more if I didn't catch it and someone has to point it out to me. Like, if I was so involved in the story that I didn't see that.
Sure.
The little self-congratulatory moment, you know?
Absolutely. Very interesting. So. No, I understand. And I completely agree with what you're saying, because, yeah, I can think of a couple of recent stories that it, you know, craft really didn't even come into mind. I was just enjoying the story as it was happening. And you don't think about the strings that are attached and what's moving the pieces around and everything. I'm with you.
Yeah, or like, you know, when every once in a while, you know, I don't go see as many movies as Matt does, but every once in a while I'll be in a movie and I really like the movie Unbreakable. I know that there are a lot of people who don't, but I really liked Unbreakable. I'm sorry. And there was...
Go on.
There was a point in Unbreakable when I was so invested in these people that I had taken off my, like, let's analyze this as a piece of filmmaking hat. And I had my feet up on the chair, and I was hugging myself, and I was just like, what's going to happen? I don't know where this is going, you know? I mean,
no, that's a sign of a great story, absolutely. I've heard
pure bliss.
And I've heard Brian, you know, speak to the opposite of, unfortunately, like, yeah, sitting through a bad movie and, you know, exactly, seeing all the machinery, as opposed to really just enjoying the story. And, like, yeah, Kraft, unfortunately, is a little too obvious, and it's like, oh, I know where this is going, and I know what this person represents, and the usual. Yeah, no, I'm with you. Absolutely. Very interesting. Well, that's cool. No, and, you know, I don't dislike Unbreakable, but it is interesting. Yeah, I can't say it's a favorite of mine. And I'm not a hater of M. Night Shyamalan either, as much as some of the stuff has gotten worse as, you know, he's gone along. I am still rooting for him in theory.
I never saw, Unbreakable, I may actually be the only one I saw of his.
Well, then that's good. And I liked Signs. I mean, I certainly hate Mel Gibson, but I really did like Signs. And a few others. But no, I didn't see The Happening just because I heard...
Oh, man, I've heard that so bad.
Exactly. And the same with The Village. I mean, I think it was called The Village. I could be getting...
Matt and Brian could do a comedy show... I believe have actually on watching The Happening and The Evil Wind.
God, yeah, I had forgotten that. All right, there you go. I mean, Jesus, I know it's whatever. I think our films are genre. I think all the genre films are like bomb proof in terms of. I think a lot of genre films are here to stay. But yeah, when there is a bad one, you do feel like it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, although I think that there's those two guys and our friend Chris love bad movies just as much as they love good movies. I think that there is a certain flavor of thrill that they get where they're just giddy.
Well, and also, but I know for a fact, like, I still haven't been able to sit through The Spirit. And that's still in Frank Miller's Spirit. Wow. And I think, yeah, and I know Brian told me the horror story of seeing that, so... I don't know.
Yeah. I haven't. I didn't even try. and I wasn't... Sin City didn't work for me, and I really wanted it to. We actually, like, went to go see that, like, in the VIP room, you know, where you could have a server and...
Atta girl.
We're in, like, the Barca loungers.
And, very nice.
Know,
sure.
Cool. But, yeah, it's...
Didn't work?
As much as I love those books... It just, I don't think that dialogue works out loud, you know?
No, and I think The Spirit hit that home even more. I liked Sin City, and I just liked it because, for me, it was a different animal from the start. I mean, it was like, you know, watching a more symbolic play as opposed to one that, you know, you're supposed to really believe the world. I mean, it was a made-up world anyway, so that's why it didn't bother me that the dialogue was as goofy as it was.
I can't... It was, I liked everyone who was involved.
Sure.
I liked the idea. I loved the source material, and it just didn't quite, like, I just found myself, like, a little bit embarrassed every once in a while for everybody.
Very good.
But...
No,
but like going to see a play put on, you know, by all the kids in your neighborhood, and you love them, and you're so glad they tried.
Jesus, very nice, excellent. Well, there we go, Kel. We did good. This is a typical kind of Bendis Fraction, Rucka Brubaker kind of conversation. See,
what?
And a girl did it. Yay!
Woohoo!
See,
I want my T-shirt.
Absolutely. Oh, if I had one to give, I survived John Suntress. And I did, and unfortunately, apparently I'm not the man that I thought I was because I didn't induce labor, so I'm kind of bummed about that. I won't deny that.
Sorry.
That's all right.
The night is young. If it happens in the next 12 hours, you'll get credit.
Atta girl. Fantastic. I'll take it.
Did you see on my blog the T-shirt I got to wear to the hospital?
No.
I got a T-shirt to wear to the hospital that says, "I'm fat, let's party."
No, I'm just bummed that you changed the name of your blog from Girl Farts. What is it called now?
No, I think it's still called Girl Farts.
Oh, is it still called? All right, excellent, because that is one of the great things about you that immediately I'm like...
I could be wrong. Oh, no, it's not. It's not up there anymore.
See?
Oh, shoot. I thought it was.
See?
It's just now my name.
That's what I thought I was going to say. It's just Kelly Sue. Okay.
At some point in my my life, and we can call the interview done now, but I have all of these, like, bizarre, my body had betrayed me in one way or the other stories that all tend to be, well, I'll just say it, they're hilarious. I want to...
oh, there it is.
I want to do them as a collection of short stories and call them Girl Farts.
Excellent.
Someday.
Well, I like the Secret Avenger. Is that the shirt?
Isn't that cool?
That's outstanding.
Yeah, Rich Stevens from Diesel Sweeties mocked that up for me. But when I got this backwards. Chad Collier mocked it up for me.
Okay.
I think he and his wife do a review site. They're very nice people. He mocked it up, but he just did. It's actually a silhouette of me taking a picture of myself in the mirror. But my phone in silhouette looks like a beer can. And so he was like, ah. And he was like, I don't know if you want this. And I was like, okay, I think that's hilarious. I could not actually post that because our lawyer would have a heart attack.
Wrong image. Go ahead.
Exactly. But I did show it to a couple of my friends, including Rich Stevens of Diesel Sweeties, and he sent it back to me with the antenna.
That's good.
The little signal marks, and he wrote back, and it was like, what beer can?
Very nice.
Like, all right, that one I can put on my website.
Absolutely. No, it looks like a walkie-talkie. Exactly. It doesn't look like a phone anymore, but it still looks good. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, sweetie, I saw you when you were carrying Henry, and you looked fantastic. You did.
Oh, well, thank you.
You did. Absolutely. Absolutely. And really, best of luck with Tallulah. I'm very happy for both of you in that way that only a single Uncle Buck kind of guy can be. So that's... and yeah, honestly, I hope to see you guys soon. I hope... I don't know. I mean, I know you're going to be busy with Tallulah and everything, but when she's portable...
possibility... that we will all be at San Diego.
Oh, that'd
but
be great.
It's not sure yet. We'll have to.
Sure.
We'll have to just see how it goes.
Right, as
but
newborns are,
is,
absolutely.
That's the first one that we have been. We're going to miss Heroes this year, which just kills us, because that's our favorite show, you know?
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it's just a little bit too soon. So San Diego is the first one that it's possible that it will all be at.
Excellent. Well, listen, yes, have the safest of and most successful of deliveries, I should say. And
thank you.
And really, I'm so glad we were able to get this in before the debut of Tallulah, so that's great.
It'll be really fun if she actually comes tomorrow, then.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you, and this is the official thank you.
All right, thank you.
There she is, kids, America's sweetheart. It's Kelly Sue DeConnick. Make sure you check out not only the Sif one-shot and the Rescue one-shot, but she's got more coming out this summer from Marvel Comics. Age of Heroes number 3 comes out in July. Girl Comics number 3 comes out this month, June. And if you reach back, you might still be able to find the first issue of Enter the Heroic Age, Rescue number 1, and Sif number 1. If not in the Thor Latverian Prometheus trade paperback, the Sif story will be collected. That's her story with Ryan Stegman. Now, that'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you that this episode was brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find great savings on all your favorite hardcover and trade paperback needs at up to 35% off the standard retail price. Again, if you're looking for books from Kelly Sue DeConnick, you can find 30 Days of Night, Eben and Stella, the trade paperback, or is it Eben and Stella? I don't know how to say that name. But a great book from IDW, co-written by Steve Niles, Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by Justin Randall. The standard retail price, $17.99 at InStockTrades.com, $12.59. And you can find Kelly Sue and Ryan's story in Thor Latverian Prometheus, the Marvel trade paperback that just came out. Standard retail price, $14.99 at InStockTrades.com, $9.44. Find the deals waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. John Sutcher saying thanks again for listening to Word Balloon. If you like the show, you can help us out by supporting the show and supporting our sponsors. Make sure you check out the deals at InStockTrades.com. Check out other sponsors as well when you hear them on the shows. And also for iPhone and iTouch users and iPad users, we have the Word Balloon iPhone app. It is available for purchase at the iTunes Store, another place where you can subscribe to the Word Balloon podcast feed. But the iPhone app is $2.99. iTunes gets their buck. The guys who made the app get a buck, and I get a buck. So that's why it's $2.99. Thanks to those who have already bought it and said they like the iPhone app so much, including Kelly Sue and Brian Bendis, which is very nice. They were kind and told me of that over the weekend. And we've got more episodes of Word Balloon coming up in the days and weeks ahead, so stick around. We're heavily into con season, and we are prepared. We've got a lot of things in the can that we need to get out to you, plus new episodes always on the way as well. So stick around. And also, Word Balloon is branching out, and there's going to be a couple other feeds announced. Once I get the shows set up and posted and stuff, I will give you that information. We want to get these interviews out there and let you hear them. And, you know, every month there's always more opportunities to talk to more people, and I want to share all that with you as much as I can. So every Tuesday you'll find a new episode of Word Balloon at wordballoon.com and at iFanboy. But if you're smart and listen to the show, come back to wordballoon.com for more information on some of the satellite shows that will be coming up, including satellite videos, and listen to every show to get more information on where to find these fine programs. Questions or comments about the show, feel free to reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. You can follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon or under my name, John Suntress, at Facebook. So, until next time, thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.